Hello, my name is Dave Emery. This is Side 2 of For the Record Program number 491, another interview with Robert Perry. And again, it's my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves once again Robert Perry, the author of, among other titles, Secrecy and Privilege, The Rise of the Bush Dynasty from Watergate to Iraq. That will be the primary focal point of our discussion in this program. Robert, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Thank you, Dan.
We're talking about the Moon Organization, its tremendous influence within the Republican right wing, within the current administration, and some of its history. I wonder if, perhaps as a way of kicking things off, Robert, because a lot of people think of the Moon Organization as some sort of weird Christian organization. Other people think of it as a cult. But I'm afraid that the realities are far more serious and far deeper than that. You present some very striking quotes in Secrecy and Privilege that I think incorporate the Moon attitude towards America in a way that is not generally well known, perhaps even to veteran listeners to this audience. I wonder if I could prevail on you to read the last paragraph on page 239 of Secrecy and Privilege about Moon's attitude towards this country and its government and its people.
Well, Moon in Secrecy and Privilege, Moon would often talk about how he actually viewed the American people, and his overall opinion was that he was supposed to rule the world. It was supposed to be that everyone was supposed to bow to Reverend Moon, and that he would provide a sort of certainly a theocratic rule, and it was almost like something like the rapture, where he would be the ruler of the entire world. And he, in this section, in one speech to his followers, Moon boasted that, quote, without knowing it, even President Reagan is being guided by Father Moon. He says history will make the position of Reverend Moon clear, and his enemies, the American population and government, will bow down to him. That is Father's tactic, the natural subjugation of the American government and population. Although Moon is sometimes called a conservative, he really is. He doesn't believe in any kind of freedom. He doesn't believe in any freedom for anybody. He is supposed to be the religious ruler under what he calls Godism, and that means that no one has any rights. You sort of see this in his organization, where initially he would there was even the idea that he would have sexual intercourse with women, and that they would then have to have sexual intercourse with other men as a way to spread what he considered the way to spread the purification of the human race. That has gotten to be more refined into this idea that he would pick your spouse, that he would be a matchmaker, he would take people who didn't know each other and have them be married, and he'd have these big mass marriages, and he would bless them in that way, and he would even tell them when they could have sex and when they would have to procreate, when he had total control over their lives in even the most intimate ways. And that's what he has really envisioned for everybody. And he's been sort of bitterly disappointed that not more Americans have joined with him in this operation. And that has led him over the years to become increasingly bitter about the United States, at least in his speeches that he gives to his followers, which are often posted on the Internet so people can actually access them, but they have never received much attention.
And again, this is the organization that is wielding tremendous influence within not only the United States as a whole, but this flag-waving, allegedly patriotic administration. And Moon's views toward the American population and the American government, I think, would be anathema to even some pretty reactionary Americans. I don't know if it's immediately handy, Robert, but also you make a remarkable quote from Reverend Moon about hamburgers and how satanic America is. Do you have that immediately handy?
Right. Well, there was basically Moon, as you say, did use the flag waving. He would promote himself as very much a lover of America in public, and there was one big rally he held in Washington with a number of flags, and he has shown that to recruits even years later, to try to show them to mislead them into thinking that they're being patriotic in joining the Moon Organization. And one person he recruited through these techniques was a New York University freshman named John Stacy in the 1990s. And Stacy rose to be a fairly significant figure in the sort of the youth movement of Moon's organizations, and was part of many of the meetings and had direct contacts with Moon himself. And I interviewed Stacy after he left, and he was still pretty shaky when I interviewed him. He'd left only a month or two before, and I had this long interview with him in New Jersey, where his family lived, and he discussed how he reached a point of breaking with Moon. And here's what he said. He was having a meeting with Moon in Anchorage, Alaska in 1995 at a leadership conference. He says, "Reverend Moon looked at me straight in the eye and said, 'America is satanic. America is so satanic that even hamburgers should be considered evil because they come from America.'" And Stacy said he thought, "Hamburgers, my father was a butcher, so that bothered me. I started feeling that I was betraying my country. In the church, it's very anti-Jesus," Stacy said. "Jesus failed miserably. He died a lonely death. Reverend Moon is the hero that comes and saves pathetic Jesus. Reverend Moon is better than God. That's why I left the Moonies, because it started to feel like idolatry. He's promoting idolatry." And so that was the view of someone who actually had risen fairly quickly into a point of some leadership in the organization. But it's the kind of comment I received from a lot of folks who had been pulled into the Moon organization, often because they're idealistic or confused or having some kind of trauma in their lives. And often the recruiting techniques were fairly cult-like, where they would be isolated from family members, and they would be bombarded with the Moon message, and eventually broken down and turned into kind of robotic figures. And their families, of course, would be very distressed. But the Moon organization had built itself that way. However, it's also used other means, which are perhaps more practical these days, which is basically Moon has used money to invest in political figures and buy protection and buy influence. One of the people that he's given large sums of money to, certainly in the hundreds of thousands, and one person said up to $10 million, was former President George H.W. Bush, who continues to give speeches on Moon's behalf. And even Barbara Bush, the mother of the current president, has been part of those efforts to get money from the Moon organization. So, I mean, it's a way for Moon to both show he's powerful, because he has these important people around him, and also to buy influence with them by giving them, in the old-fashioned way, by giving them money.
Review for us Jerry Falwell's benefits at the hand of Moon.
Well, Falwell, of course, is sort of a typical case. Many of the conservatives fell into Moon's orbit when they were having financial troubles, because Moon had this seemingly unlimited amount of money, and in talking to conservatives, they don't really want to know where the money comes from, because they think they might know the answer. They're concerned that it's been money laundered into the United States illegally. They're aware, at least dimly, of Moon's unsavory connections in South America and Asia. They probably down deep wonder if it is drug money. It's certainly one of the likely sources, original sources at least, of some of the money, even if his main role is to launder it, not to actually deal in those direct illegal ways. So you have this, all this money coming in, but conservatives have found it very useful, especially when they're desperate, to turn to Moon. In the case of Falwell, he had sold a number of bonds to build Liberty University, which is a Christian right school in southwestern Virginia, and he was on the verge of bankruptcy with it. I was able to find through IRS records that one of Moon's organizations had then given, it was a couple million dollars, to a nonprofit also in southwestern Virginia, run by two people who in turn turned around and bought up the debt that was on the verge of going bad for Falwell and for Liberty University, and basically forgave him this debt. And what they did is, because the debt was being sold at such a fraction of its original worth, they were able to buy up a significant amount of Liberty University's debt and then hand it back to Falwell to forgive. So Liberty University was saved by this money, and the money came indirectly from the Moon organization. The losers in this were these well-meaning Christians who had, especially in Texas, who had been approached with these bonds to help support Liberty University. So they bought these bonds and then eventually sold them for only a fraction of their value, and they ended up going back to Falwell through this circuitous route. So followed may not very well. But the original source of the money that saved him was the Moon Organization.
I guess one could say that God helps those who help themselves, huh? And he was helping himself. One of the early investigations into the Moon Organization was the Koreagate investigation, or so dubbed by the popular press. Tell us about that in Tongson Park, and what was the ultimate disposition of Congressman Fraser's investigation?
Well, as you noted, in the latter part of the 1970s, Congressman Fraser conducted an investigation into South Korea's efforts to buy influence in the U.S. government. South Korea obviously was very dependent on U.S. military protection. Its government was concerned, especially after Vietnam, that the U.S. might lose interest in doing so. If you remember at the time, President Carter was even talking about reducing the numbers of American troops stationed in South Korea. So that's the backdrop. And what happened was the Korean CIA, the KCIA, set about, and the U.S. government intercepted many of their messages, to use different organizations in the United States to buy influence. And they were going to target the media, they were going to target the Congress, and they were going to target academia in the United States. And so they began various programs to provide money, support for members of Congress. They even provided women who were made available to some members of Congress. The most prominent South Korean figure was Tongson Park, who was a bit of a playboy, or at least the person who was able to show people a good time and had them over, had politicians over to a fancy club in Georgetown, and used those kinds of methods to build some influence. But what the Fraser investigation also discovered was that another less known tentacle of this operation was the Moon Organization. And so Fraser and his investigators were the first ones to sort of put together how Moon had developed as an entity of Korean intelligence, and how Korean intelligence had put Moon in touch with key figures in Japan who provided him money, and some of them were involved with the Yakuza crime family, and how Moon then was able to bring money into the United States and spread it around. Interestingly, the three targets of Moon's organization have been Congress, or the political system, the media through the Washington Times and through a number of media conference organizations that he sets up, and academia. He was involved in investing in schools, including Bridgeport University in Connecticut. So you have Moon essentially seeming to execute a plan that the U.S. government found was part of a scheme put together by Korean intelligence. And this was exposed in the late 70s, but a number of right-wing groups, including Terry Dolan, who was then running a company called NICPAC, went after Fraser, attacked him, tried to find irregularities in his investigation, which is sort of a practice we've seen over and over again, where these attackers will zero in on little tiny mistakes. You know, in the case of Fraser, he had given some advances to some people who had come to work for his committee, and that's technically not supposed to happen. You're supposed to wait till they've done the work. But, you know, it's common in business, but it was that kind of thing they went after and tried to put Fraser on the defensive, that he was accused of being a communist sympathizer, and he was trying to run for another office in Minnesota and lost. And so Moon was able to eliminate one of his adversaries in a technique that we have seen now repeated over and over and over again, which has, in a sense, changed how U.S. politics works.
Veteran listeners will recall early discussion of the Moon Organization from a wonderful book called Gifts of Deceit by the late Robert Bocher, who was Congressman Fraser's aide in the Koreagate scandal, by the way, overseen and to a certain extent attenuated by Leon Jaworski, the Watergate special prosecutor. Robert Boucher wrote a very good book called Gifts of Deceit about the Moon Organization, tracing its history and many of the things that you touched on. Then later he, in something that's sort of reminiscent in some ways of Gary Webb's passing, he went off the roof of a building in New York City, whether he jumped, fell, or was pushed. I don't think there was ever any finding, formal finding in that investigation, but it just... a disturbing footnote to this. In recent presidential campaign, there was one of a number of media blitzkriegs, so to speak, against John Kerry, was the Sinclair Broadcasting Network's echoing of the Swift Boat veterans. And somebody who had gone to you, one of the things that you related on the ConsortiumNews.com website was that a guy named Carlton Sherwood, who was a primary figure in the Sinclair Broadcasting attack on Kerry, also had previously been something of a spear carrier for Reverend Moon. Tell us about Carlton Sherwood, how he figures into Sinclair Broadcasting, and what he did on behalf of Moon.
Well, Carlton Sherwood was one of these figures in the early 1980s, mid-1980s, who came to the defense of Reverend Moon. Moon at the time, because of the investigation that Frazier had done, some of that material was then turned over to prosecutors. They rather bravely went through and prosecuted Moon on a tax case, because they, even though they felt it was a broader money laundering case, they narrowed it to a tax case. Moon's conservative defenders started rallying to his defense and saying he was being persecuted. Carlton Sherwood, who then went to work for Moon at the Washington Times, did perhaps the most comprehensive defense of Moon, an attack on both the Frazier investigation and on the prosecutors who were involved in prosecuting Moon up in New York for the tax case. There are elements of this book are rather absurd, where Sherwood claims he was allowed to review all of Moon's financial records and that he found nothing untoward, which obviously is just not feasible. Moon's financial records are extraordinarily complicated and spread all over the world.
One of the things you note in your book is that the organizations use a technique called smurfing, in which couriers, often Japanese women, would bring in huge amounts of cash. I mean, there's no possible way to trace it.
Right. Much of Moon's operation was a cash operation. So even if you looked at, not that you could look at all the records in any one place, but even if you could, they wouldn't show up, all these women carrying large sums of money to various banks. There was one fairly famous case in Uruguay where Moon had a bank, and these women would come in and deposit, millions of dollars over several days.
In cash.
But anyway, the book was an effort to give Moon some protection, to make him seem like he was being persecuted, and to put on the defensive anyone who would criticize him. So Carlton Sherwood had that history. Later on, his book was republished, I think, by Regnery. There were allegations in the early 1990s that the Moon Organization had promised to buy 100,000 copies, which obviously would have made it a very profitable book for Regnery prior to Regnery republishing it. So you have, and I must say, there's some question whether or not that those payments were made, but that is the kind of operation that Moon would do, where he would find ways to get money into your pocket, but often not directly. It would either go through a front group or go for speech, or maybe he would buy a building that you were trying to unload. He would find ways to get you money, and that's sort of his M.O. So it would certainly fit with that, although I think Regnery has denied that that's how it was done. But anyway, the book was published and was used to whitewash Moon's role in these influence buying operations. And Carlton Sherwood then surfaces this past year, having done a documentary attacking Kerry, essentially calling John Kerry a traitor. And it was the documentary that the Sinclair Broadcasting System wanted to air, and was going to order all its stations across the country to put this on. It was considered such a piece of propaganda and so unfair that stockholders at Sinclair rebelled and tried to get Sinclair to back off. Sinclair ultimately broadcast elements of the documentary, but not the documentary in its entirety.
And it's interesting, too, to ruminate about the labeling of John Kerry as a traitor. It's one of the reasons I wanted you to read that quote from page 239, where Moon's talking about how he's going to subjugate his enemies, the American government and the American people. I mean, if that's patriotism, I'd hate to say treason. One of the things you talk about, too, in the secrecy and privilege, and the Moon Organization fits into this, but the larger control of American political perception through the media and their ability, the Republican right's ability to simply annihilate opposition, either using legal entanglements or simply a propaganda blitzkrieg that ultimately will end the political career of anybody who gets in the right. Not unlike in certain ways what I think the media did with Gary Webb. But I wonder if during the closing minutes of our interview here you would expound on that, because it really appears that that's one of the ways that Moon really has been able to weigh in as a major American power broker.
Well, I think there's no question about that. He has pretty much all the smear campaigns that you can think of run, especially against Democratic presidential nominees in recent times. The Washington Times has either played a primary or a secondary role in, whether it be trying to present Michael Dukakis as someone who was under psychiatric care, a story that was so false that the reporter whose name was put on it, Gene Grabowski, resigned over it. But it still was put in play. Ronald Reagan then called Dukakis a cripple. And so it was something that was talked about and raised doubts about Dukakis, even if it wasn't true. The same was true in 92 with Clinton as a KGB agent, supposedly, according to Moon's organization. Another thing that wasn't backed up, but just kind of thrown out there to raise doubts. In 96, and of course during the Clinton years, the Moon's group pushed many of the rather scurrilous attacks about raising suggestions of Clinton being involved in murders and other kinds of nefarious activities. So it was a way to always put those in play. In 2000, it was involved directly in the attacks on Gore, raising questions of whether Gore was delusional. Gore was, of course, accused of making false statements. In some cases, as I show in Secrecy and Privilege, it was really a case of the media misquoting Gore and then not wanting to make corrections and allowing then places like the Washington Times to run with the misquotes. One of the more famous ones was about the Love Canal case, where Gore was quoted as saying that I was the one that started it all, but he never said that. He was referring to another case similar. He said that was the one that started it all. And the Washington Times, of course, was not concerned about trying to get the quote corrected. It was interested in putting out stories about Gore being delusional. And those things had effects. I mean, they were, especially since by the time we get to the late 90s, the conservative media is so big and so powerful. It's got not just like a newspaper and some magazines. It's got talk radio. It's got Fox News. It certainly has the Wall Street Journal editorial pages. It has a lot of columnists all across the country. So it was something that if you put these stories in play, they would get repeated to the point that many Americans would believe them. And much of how we saw also when we get into the Bush administration, the second Bush administration, these kinds of stories about weapons of mass destruction and attacking people like Scott Ritter, who was one of the guys who questioned those allegations by the Bush administration, was also deemed a traitor. So by putting these kinds of stories out and getting them into this conservative echo chamber, people, especially if they're just average citizens, in effect, someone like a Scott Ritter or a Gary Webb, these are people who do not have a lot of protections. They can see their lives ruined. And politicians, even with the protections that politicians would have, they have seen their reputations ruined. So it's a very intimidating aspect of operating in Washington. And I've been attacked through the Washington Times when I was trying to do stories about the Contra drugs and in the 1980s and on trying to expose Oliver North's secret operations. Brian Barger, my partner at AP, and I came under attack from the Washington Times on the front page. And that's an intimidating thing, especially when people don't understand fully that the Washington Times is not really a newspaper. It's a propaganda vehicle. People assume that it must be a regular newspaper. It looks like a newspaper. And many of the stories are pretty straight. So when they throw one in that is really disinformation or smear operation, people don't necessarily know that. So it's become a way for Moon to really exercise power and be very and provide a great service to the conservative movement in Washington and the Republicans in particular. And now, of course, it's because the conservative press corps has gotten so large, it's much easier. And people are just unwilling to take them on because they know that if they do, their livelihoods may be lost in trying to just act like citizens and say, here's what the facts are, here's what we found. If you're a journalist or if you're a politician or a congressional investigator or someone in the federal government that's whistleblowing, you can come under attack by these people and they will ruin your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the money that came in, whatever the source, this mysterious money coming in from South America and Asia through the money laundering techniques of the Moon Organization, has had a real effect on how American politics works. And Americans don't really understand the full import of all of it. They think of it, as you say, they think of Moon as kind of a quirky, weird cult guy, perhaps, but the Washington Times insists that it's quote independent of Moon, but it's not really. It may not be out there proselytizing for his church, but it is a way for him to exercise power, and it's a way for him to ensure protection of his operations, which include not just religious stuff, but include these various nefarious business activities. That should be investigated by the U.S. government, but are not being investigated because he's got so many protectors.
Well, Robert, unfortunately, you and ConsortiumNews.com don't have access to those huge rivers of cash. However, this is the holiday. We're nearing the end of the holiday gift-giving season, and you have a number of things that are available for modest amounts of cash. Tell us about your website. Tell us about how to get the book.
Well, ConsortiumNews.com is something that I started almost a decade ago as a way to get information stories out that the major media, which I've been part of, just weren't doing anymore. And that includes like some of this long series we did on Reverend Moon. But it covers a whole gamut of investigative type topics. So people can go there. It's a free website. If people want to donate, they certainly are welcome to. We do provide that possibility at the site, and also you can go through the site and click to our book page. We do sell Secrecy and Privilege, the new book I wrote. It came out in September, and there are copies also of Lost History, the Contra Cocaine book that has a lot about Gary Webb's case. And we also have Trick or Treason, which is sort of a narrative that I did on my PBS investigation of the 1980 election and allegations that the Republicans worked behind the scenes to undercut President Carter's hostage negotiations during that time frame. So those are all available, and people can also read a number of, I think, interesting stories about both current politics and some historical issues.
And listeners should also be aware that the For the Record programs are being archived on Real Audio by sister station WFMU. Go to the website www.wfmu.org/Dave Emory, one word, DaveEmory, and you'll be able to listen till time indeterminate to these various interviews that I've done with Robert Perry and the other For the Record shows. Also remember www.spitfirelist.com. That's the Spitfire website with written descriptions of the broadcasts and other material available as well. We've been speaking with Robert Perry, the author of, among other titles, Secrecy and Privilege, The Rise of the Bush Dynasty from Watergate to Iraq, currently available. This concludes Side 2 For the Record program number 491, another interview with Robert Perry being recorded on December 19th of the year 2004. For Robert Perry, this is Dave Emery saying happy holidays and so long.